You might have been surprised by a story we brought you this week on research that showed that Australian women are much less likely than men to be properly treated for heart disease and twice as likely to die in the 6 months after their attack. Well, according to the author of a book on gender bias in the medical profession, numbers like this are far from unusual and extend well beyond Australia. Maya Dusenbury began researching her book after her own encounter with the medical profession in the United States. And here's how she responded when I asked if those Australian heart disease numbers surprised her.
You know, they really don't. We see this in heart disease treatment in the US as well, where women suffer from this undertreatment and often are more likely to die as a result.
You've looked at a range of diseases in your book, including cancer. Take us through some of the evidence that you've uncovered on the differences in treatment of men and women.
So my own interest in this started when I was diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis, which is an autoimmune disease. And I just started hearing a lot of similar stories from other women who face this kind of tendency to not trust women's own reports of their symptoms and investigate them as thoroughly as they would if they were men.
You say you began your book after your own encounter with the health system. Tell us about that.
I had actually a pretty straightforward time getting diagnosed. I was diagnosed pretty quickly and feel really lucky because I realized how rare that actually is. It was partly kind of recognizing that my own experience was not the norm that prompted me to look further.
You write that there's a sort of silence around all of this. Was it difficult to get women to share their stories?
I think that in part because of that silence, there's a lot of pent-up desire to share these stories when given the opportunity. They almost all thought they were the, you know, one in a million who had this really terrible experience. And so I do think that silence kind of contributes to perpetuating the problem where we all kind of have this sense that it must have been just me, instead of kind of seeing this as a pattern and as systemic problems and biases in the system.
Is there any one story that you've heard that particularly stands out for you?
One that really sticks with me was a young woman named Maggie who started experiencing severe abdominal pain when she was in college. And she went to the ER and she was in and out of the ER three times in as many days. Initially, she was accused of just having a panic attack and actually had to get her mom on the phone to explain to the nurse that she didn't have a history of anxiety. And then once they believed that, okay, it's not anxiety, they started running tests. But as things were coming back normal, she was accused of being hysterical, and eventually they decided that she was seeking painkillers and stopped believing her pain entirely, even as it was getting horrifically severe, so severe that she was immobilized and couldn't speak. She was denied painkillers, and she was ultimately rushed into emergency surgery, and they found that she had a hole in her stomach that had ruptured from a really aggressive ulcer. Her doctors were sort of offered the excuse that this was a very rare diagnosis, especially in somebody who's so young.
And you don't think they'd do that with a man?
Men are given the benefit of the doubt a little bit more than women. Treated with an initial default that if they are entering the medical system, it must be because that something is really wrong.
You did find when you were doing your research that there is a pattern. What are some of the most startling numbers that you found?
One from the heart disease realm is that women under 55 are seven times more likely than the average patient to be discharged from the emergency room in the middle of suffering a heart attack. There's an interesting study out of the UK that looked at the diagnostic delay in brain tumors and found that women as well as low-income patients had longer diagnostic delays, had to see more doctors before they were referred to a specialist. And in other contexts in the emergency room, another study found that women wait 16 minutes longer than men do on average to receive pain medication when they're complaining of abdominal pain in the ER.
So how far does this extend? Is there a gender bias in medical research into drugs, for example?
Certainly. In the United States, it wasn't until the early 90s that this was really kind of put on the public radar. Women's health advocates pointed out that a lot of clinical research was being done exclusively on men, and there were congressional hearings, and that prompted a change in federal law so that now federally funded research must include women. And yet we still see that it's not the norm for researchers to always analyze their results by gender. And when it comes to preclinical research that's done using animals or cell lines, it has remained the norm to use male subjects.
So how do doctors and health specialists respond when you show them that there is this difference in how women and men are treated?
Well, I think there's that sense that it's other people. Because doctors just aren't getting feedback on when they're wrong, they kind of assume that they got it right unless they hear otherwise. But as there's more interest in doing research on implicit bias and in a variety of realms, I think that we're seeing more openness in the medical profession to looking at how those implicit biases affect care.
Maya Dewsenbury, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
And Maya Dewsenbury is the author of a book called Doing Harm, The Truth About How Bad Medicine and Lazy Science Leave Women Dismissed, Undiagnosed and Sick.